When it comes to buying a home, let's look at this different. Buying a home is a great idea because it's a forced savings plan. As you pay that mortgage off, you have saved money. I mean, if you buy a home for $100,000 and over the years you pay, or $200,000, over the year you pay it down to nothing, you force yourself to save, even if the house didn't go up in value. You force yourself to save that $200,000. It's an inflation hedge. Now, a lot of you in this room are young enough and watching this are young enough that you haven't really faced real inflation. Inflation for the last couple of decades has been 4 or 5% a year, 3% a year. It's not been a big deal. When I got in the real estate business in 1978, inflation was raging and the real estate in our area was going up 12% a year. And so if we were doing comps on a house that sold 3 months ago, we had to add a percent a month to the price of it to have an accurate price of what it was selling for now. That's how fast it was moving. So if inflation is up there in double digits, any of you remember back in the 70s when inflation was shooting, skyrocketing? You know, if inflation is double digits, the good news is if you own a house, you're part of the ride. If you don't own a home, you're not part of the ride. You're being locked out by inflation. That's a big deal. And of course, it grows virtually tax-free for most people. Current tax law says if you own your personal residence 2 years, you can make a profit on it, a gain on it, of up to $500,000, $500,000 if you're married filing jointly, tax-free, up to $250,000 if you're filing as a single person. So it's a great idea. Now, when you're buying a home, always buy title insurance. Title insurance insures you against an unclean title. Now, some people think because they haven't done a lot of real estate deals, they say, well, that's just one of those closing costs. That's just one of those ripoffs. I'm not buying title insurance. The title's not bad. Listen, titles are bad all the time. Title insurance insures you that if something's messed up in a former transfer of ownership, that that title company has checked that and they have insured against that. And then if somebody comes back and has a claim, they have to pay them. An example is I owned a piece of property one time that I bought from a guy who had bought from two sisters. And those two sisters owned the house from an estate. Their mom had died. Turns out the two sisters had a brother. He didn't sign off on the house when it was sold, and it wasn't approved by the court through the probate system. And so they didn't have full title transferred to the guy who then sold it to me. Brother's standing around going, I want some money. And I called the title company and I said, brother wants some money. And they paid brother some money. And he signed off on the documents and then we had clean title again. Had he not done that, he really had an honest, he had a place here. In this, he's one of those heirs that appears back out of the night. And these things happen. Well, it doesn't happen. It happens all the time. I had a friend of mine bought a house, and the title company had done such a bad job. They had allowed an FHA loan, which is always a first mortgage, to be put on this house, and there was already a mortgage on it. So that means that FHA loan was now a second mortgage. Very unusual. So guess what the first mortgage guy got? Paid off by the title company. He got his money in full from the title company because they had to do that so that that FHA loan was a first mortgage like they had guaranteed the title to be clean to be. And so always buy title insurance. These things really do happen out there in the real world. If the lot is not a standard subdivision lot, if you're buying land in any way, get a survey. Get a survey. Now, I'm from Tennessee, and in Tennessee, we don't have, when you fly over Tennessee, it doesn't look like little checkerboards. When you fly over some parts of the country, it looks beautiful and there's these little perfect squares and everybody knows where their line is because it's all laid out in townships and squares and those kinds of things. In Tennessee, the survey was done from a pile of rocks to an oak tree that died 50 years ago. And the pile of rocks is gone too. And three or four generations have been stretching the truth about how many acres are in the back field. Until by the time you get back there, you realize that you really have 20 acres and everybody's been telling everybody it was 30 for years. And you got ripped because you didn't get a survey. You always get a certified survey unless you're buying a standard subdivision type lot. In that situation, you're pretty protected. Now, when you're buying a home, the realtor's access to the MLS system can make house hunting easier. Because otherwise, you're just driving around looking at signs. You're just all over the place. And you can they can search the internet. They can help you search the internet. There's all kinds of ways to get access. You can look at the pictures, like we're saying. You get to be one of those people that enjoys the view of the home without even having to drive over there. And then make that decision on whether you're going to go or not. Now, the only problem you run into with some realtors when you're buying a home is realtors, the good news is when you're selling, they think like retailers. The bad news is when you're buying, they think like retailers. They think in full price. It's sticker shock to them for you to get a serious bargain. I discovered this having grown up in a real estate person's household, but then when I walked over and started buying foreclosures, I was amazed at how emotionally blocked a lot of realtors were on a serious, serious, deep ditch bargain. I mean, cut to the bone bargain. And so you drive up and I'm looking at this foreclosure and the house is worth $300,000. It's Tuesday morning. Foreclosure is on Friday. It's worth $300,000. They owe $150,000 on it. But on Friday, the bidding will start at $150,000 at the foreclosure sale. I'd like to buy it before that happens because I don't have to bid against anybody else if I can buy it before Friday. Does this make sense? So I pick up the phone, I call the realtor. At that time, I'm an investor. Calling the realtor was a courtesy, but I grew up in that business, so I could have gone and just knocked on the door and talked to the people, but I grew up in the business, so as a courtesy, I call the realtor and say, listen, I don't know if you realize this or not, but your listing on Main Street over here is going to be foreclosed on Friday. You're kidding! Oh my gosh, they never told me they were in trouble. Well, it's in trouble. I'm looking at the thing. It's going to be 11 o'clock of Friday's sale, and I'd like to go ahead and buy it before then, and it looks to me like they owe $150,000 on it. Yeah, that's right. And I guess they're motivated now because, you know, they wouldn't come down on the price before. And I said, well, you know, I'll give them $160,000 for it, and we'll close it this afternoon. Well, they'll never take $160,000. I said, they will Friday. They will start, the bidding will start at $150,000 on Friday. That's how this is going to work. Well, I can't go in there in good conscience and present that offer. I said, you're going to, in good conscience, sit here and let the thing be foreclosed on because you can't wrap your mind around a deep discount? And I've had these discussions hundreds of times, because they can't go from $300,000 to $150,000 that quick in their emotions. So if you get a realtor, you kind of got to train them about this thing if you're looking for a deal. And if they think you're a retail buyer, of course, they're all excited, but I'm not a retail buyer. Now, when you get ready to buy a home, here's some things to keep in mind. Always buy at the bottom of the neighborhood range, the bottom of the price range in the neighborhood. If the price range in this neighborhood is $200,000 to $280,000, you don't want to buy the $290,000 house. You certainly don't want to buy the $305,000 house in a neighborhood that's known for $250,000 houses. You understand? Because it's not going to appreciate. You're going to be at the top of the market, and nobody comes to that neighborhood looking at the top of the market. You want to be down at the bottom of that range, down close to $200,000, because you're the smallest home, and people that dream of living in that big, fancy neighborhood can barely get in there in your house. And that'll always cause you to get great appreciation. Buy at the bottom of the market. Now, I've been taught this in appraisal class for years in college and as I was getting my license and different things. Homes appreciate in good neighborhoods, and price on real estate is based on three things: location, location, and location. You can take a mobile home that's a piece of garbage, a house trailer, a trailer with the wheels off, and put it in the field in the middle of Mississippi or Iowa, and it won't bring $2,000, $3,000. You put it on Malibu Beach in California, it'll bring $1,000,002. And it's not the trailer, it's that little piece of sand that it's sitting on. You can take an old home from the 70s that needs redecorating, it's really kind of ugly. The architecture is behind, the goodies, the bells and whistles in there definitely aren't up to snuff with new construction technique, and you know, 1974, out of date, all the appliances are ugly, everything, and you can't give that house away unless its zip code is 90210, Beverly Hills. And that's what the homes look like in a lot of Beverly Hills. But it has to do with where it's sitting in proximity to Rodeo Drive. And all of a sudden, this thing that might be a $100,000 property in some areas or a $200,000 property is suddenly a multi-gazillion dollar property right there in the middle of Beverly Hills. It has to do with location. Location, location, and location. When you get ready to buy, if possible, go ahead and try to buy near water or someplace with a view. People will pay money to be near water or someplace with a view. You get up high on a mountain and you can see way out through there, that view, look at that view. And by the way, if you're going to list your home and you have a view on the internet, put a picture of the view on the internet. This is what it looks like from the front porch. And do that 360 thing, right? That iPix type thing. And show that if I was sitting in this rocking chair, this is what I would see. Oh, wow, I want to go look at this house. You might not even show them a picture of the front of the house, but if you see what it looks like looking out the front window, they'll come look. That view is big deal, a big deal. And water is a big deal. We have a neighborhood in right near where I live, and I'm sorry because I'm kind of making fun of some of my friends, but they'll go along with me. They know what I'm talking about. It was a series of homes built back in the 70s, and basically they went out in the middle of this hay field like they do a lot of times when they're building a house, right, or out in the middle of, you know, pasture land, and they just started building a house. So happened there was a pond out in the middle of this hay field. And this pond, well, we renamed the hayfield to a meadow, and we renamed the pond to a lake. And so now we have Meadow Lake Subdivision. And when you drive down the street on Meadow Lake Subdivision, there are houses on one side of the street that aren't on the lake. And they are substantially cheaper than the ones across the street that are on the lake. It's a pond in a hayfield. But it's water, and that pond will justify tens of thousands of dollars of difference because, look, there's a duck on the pond. And all of a sudden, people start writing checks, don't they? And that happens everywhere, in every area of the country. That's not unique to my area of the country. By the way, a well-dressed drainage ditch starts to sound a lot like a creek. Keep these things in mind. It's a wet weather creek, though. Keep that in mind. It's gee. Buy bargains by overlooking outdated carpet, ugly wallpaper, and the Elvis print in the master bedroom. See, how many of you remember the carpet like this? Y'all remember that? Used to have a rake to make it stand up. Do you remember that? If you get a house with this stuff in it, you got a potential bargain. Because let me tell you, a lot of things go retro. Carpet doesn't go retro. It just gets old. That's all. I mean, the shag carpet that you need to mow, I mean, it's deep. My hand is disappearing in there. And if you go in the house and the people doing this were the decorators, well, I mean, if this is the decorating, you're ready, aren't you? You got a velvet Elvis over the master bedroom. I smell bargain right then, don't I? You put the shag carpet and the velvet Elvis together, oh, we got a deal for sure. Because the average person walking in that house doesn't have the imagination to look past that. This seller didn't think like a retailer, and you got a bargain. These are things you can fix cheap. This is how you buy bargains, really. You find stuff like this, and it's really out there. It wasn't that hard to find it, which is scary. I remember one time I was buying and selling foreclosures. I had this young couple at the church that they said, Dave, if you get one of those foreclosures, we've got some cash saved up. We want to buy one of those. We want to buy one of those. I thought, well, that's okay. Okay, I'll find. And I found a house. This was 20 years ago. And it was a nice house 20 years ago. Now, today it'd be a lot bigger numbers. But I found this house for them, and I thought, well, I'll cut them in on a deal. And so the house was worth about $140,000. So it'd be worth hundreds of thousands now, right? It was worth about $140,000, and I was able to buy it for $60,000, under half. And I told them, I'll make $5,000 on you. You give me $65,000 for it, and you close it the same day I buy it, and that's a quick five for me, and you got a great deal. And they, oh, good, a great deal. Yeah, that's under half. I mean, $140,000, and that's under $70,000. That's a sweet deal. It's 50% discount. I was doing them a favor. I could have sold it for a lot. I take them over there. She walks around looking at it. She comes back out and she says, we just can't buy it. Why not? I just can't stand that carpet color. I'm like, lady, you're buying this thing $75,000 under market. I mean, do you want to carpet the whole neighborhood? You'll still come out. We could put carpet on the roof and you'll still come out. We can change the carpet 6 times a year and you'll still come out. But she mentally couldn't get her imagination past the decorating, even with a $75,000, even with over a 50% discount. That's a big deal. And you know, I tell you, buying foreclosures, you get to see a lot of weird stuff. I mean, you get to see these. One of the last deals I did was another home that was about 6,000 square feet. It was a big old house, and it was an old house, and the appraisal on it was 140 as well. And this bank had foreclosed on it. It actually, it was not the same deal, but it was the same numbers, 140, and bank had foreclosed on it, and the bank now owned it. And I pulled the foreclosure papers up. It happened before I could get to it, and the bank owned it, and the bank had just bid it in for $60,000. So again, 140 over 60,000. So I go over there looking at the house and all, and it was August, and I walked into this house, and these people had had kitties. Lots of kitties. And these kitties didn't behave. These kitties didn't use the little box, apparently. It was unbelievable odor. And I went back out of that house. Man, I was thought I was just, my clothes were in shreds. I mean, it was just like a toxic dump. And the house wasn't bad, but this thing, it would, tears running out of my eyes, is so bad. And so this bank had been sold to another bank. And they had their little real estate person in another city who had no clue. Because if you're in another city, often you have no clue about real estate. You don't know what the other side of the tracks is because you don't know where the tracks are, right? It's a dumb idea. So they send in this young lady, and she was in her early 20s, and she was their real estate person now that the bank had been sold. They flew her in to look at the house, and so I had already been in correspondence with her, talking to her and so forth, and I said, well, I do want to buy it, and I'll be happy to give you guys a good offer on it, but I want you, when you come in, I want to go over there and look at it with you. And of course, when I heard she was coming in, I went over and made sure every door was closed real tight and let the heat just run, you know. I mean, it just, whew. And this poor young, bless her heart, she went in there. I didn't even go in. I just stood back and just watched my watch. Like 34 seconds later, I mean, she hits the front door going, it was great. I mean, they paid $60,000 for it at the foreclosure. I bought it from her for $40,000. I would have paid $60,000 for it, but I was having a lot of fun. And I figure, you know, we did end up literally having to pull the floor up all the way through the thing. But when you buy something at 30% of value, you can pull the floor up, you know, and that's, you're not looking for that deal. Believe me, you're not looking for that deal. You don't even want that house after I put a new floor in it, but you are looking for a deal where you can change out the carpet and the Velvet Elvis. Always buy a home that is attractive from the street and has a good floor plan. A good basic floor plan. So you can fix stuff like this, but if a house is ugly at its bones, if it's got ugly bones, you got an ugly house. And you can't change the carpet enough. It's still ugly after you change the carpet. You know what I'm saying? And so if it's got ugly bones, you got to stay away from it, or you got to buy it so cheap you can completely tear the thing down just about and start again. My very first house I bought had ugly bones. It was a really dumb idea, but it was a good deal. I thought, until I tried to sell it, because it had ugly bones. In Tennessee, sometimes when we're building a neighborhood, we'll cut a road through the side of a mountain. And the houses above the road are kind of perched up there, and the ones below the road are kind of down below there. We've got a joke in the business we call in that area. We say the ones down below the road are oil pan houses, because you can stand on the front porch and look at the oil pans of the cars as they drive by. That's about the elevation. Well, we bought the one up the hill. And the idiot that built this thing up on the hill decided to build it really tall up on the hill. And so it kind of just stuck up there, ugly in the air. Bad elevation, a bad idea. And had this driveway that went straight down like this to the street. Just straight down. You had to turn the car to keep from dragging stuff when you got to the bottom. You know what I'm saying? I came in after an ice storm one night. My parents were over visiting with my wife, and this idiot driving beside me in an ice storm had gone into a spin and hit my car on every side. He just went all the way around it. And so I'm not in a good mood already when I get home, and ice is about this thick all over everything. You can't walk on anything. And so I'm going, there's no way you walk up this driveway. And so I walk up the other side of the driveway in the neighbor's yard, and I'm trying to cut across the top of the driveway to get to the front porch, and I fell. Well, I'm breakdancing like a ninja turtle all the way to the street. You know, screaming and saying things I can't say in church. You know what I'm saying? My mother looks out the window and says, somebody's playing on your driveway, honey. Don't buy a house with ugly bones. You can't fix that. I ended up giving that house away just about. Don't buy a house with ugly bones. Have the home inspected mechanically and structurally by a certified home inspector. When you're getting an appraisal, remember that an appraisal is an opinion of value. Some appraisers understand that they are to render an opinion. Others think they're God. And they get this little ego thing going in the process. Had an appraiser one time. I had the house sold for $262,500. And he had the contract, so he knew what the deal was at. That was part of the package we gave them. Gave him comparable sales to show that it was worth that. But this guy had a little thing going about his power, a little Barney Fife action. Turns in the appraisal, not at $262,500, but at $262,250. Now, you don't know within $250 what a house is worth. There is no such thing. I've done hundreds of appraisals. That's just ego. So we put him on the list of do not call ever again. Appraiser list, right? Do not buy trailers or mobile homes. Do not buy timeshares. Why? These two things, the value disappears on them. Trailers go down in value. Mobile homes go down in value like a rock. They go down in value faster than a car. Financially, it's a car you sleep in. Don't buy them. Timeshares go down in value 1,000% to zero the instant you buy them because no one will buy it. There is no secondary market for timeshares. You can't give the stupid things away. And when you get caught up in buying a timeshare, you're going to own it the rest of your life. You're hung there. It is not an investment. You're better off take your vacation money, go on vacation. Now,